Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Brandon Wheel to the podcast. Welcome back, Brandon.
Thanks for having me back, James.
All right. So, Brandon, you've been a guest at least four or five times in the past, I want to say.
We're racking them up, man.
That's exactly it. So for those that haven't heard your voice before or may not be familiar with you, you are an employee of Iridicio. You're the operations director. You're a CMRP. You're heavily involved with SMRP.
Also correct.
You are the co-chair this year for the conference.
Yes.
All right. So that means next year you got the big job of being the chair of the conference.
Yeah, I will be. Yes, it is a great mantle of responsibility.
Yeah, no pressure. Make sure it doesn't suck. So prior to working with Iridicio, you did some consulting. You're also in the Navy and the nuclear end of things, but I believe you weren't under the water. You were on top of the water, correct?
That is correct. Yes, I was what the submariners refer to as a target. So I was on an aircraft carrier.
All right, excellent. So I provided a very brief background there, but what do you want to fill in? Tell us about your background for maintenance reliability and how long have you been involved in the maintenance and reliability thing?
Yeah, it's coming up to, I guess this year will be 21 years of total experience in maintenance operations, et cetera. I mean, the Navy being the first part of that. And then a lot of training, consulting, and project implementation, so today's topic, right? Got quite a few years under my belt helping manage these projects, implement these types of projects that we're going to be talking about today.
Excellent. And that is exactly what we're going to talk about today, is essentially a project manager's guide to reliability implementations. Now, what is a maintenance and reliability implementation?
Anytime you want to transform the way that your organization approaches maintenance and approaches reliability and approaches maintainability, and you're trying to get better at those things, I would consider that an implementation. Now, the scale of that is going to depend on where you sit within your maturity compared to best practices, as well as, how far do we want to go with this thing, right? So that's going to be the scope or scale of this implementation is going to vary. But, anytime you want to do something different, that I would consider that an implementation.
All right. Excellent. So that implementation is all about, like you said, changing the culture, driving improvements in asset performance. You know, there's a lot to that. Now, oftentimes I see organizations, or maybe not organizations, but people within those organizations just decide they're going to start maintenance and reliability, but they do it without a project plan. They don't understand the milestones, all the dependencies, all those different things. How important is having a project plan? Or is it not important and we can just, pick and choose stuff how we want?
I think you nailed it with the things that I would want to see in a project plan. But it's incredibly important to have one. You can start doing some things, onesie twosies. You can, try, hey, we heard about this planning scheduling thing, so we're going to get a planner. Or, boy, PDM seems like that's the hot thing that we want to make sure we're doing. Let's go buy some UE guns and some, vibration equipment. You can do it that way, but you're not going to get very far. As you mentioned, there are a lot of interdependent processes that need to all come together. And these processes cover, different functions within the organization. So this is a complex beast. Reliability is not a single thing, but it's a group of activities that come together to get us there. So without a project plan to identify all those things, prioritize them, manage them, track them, assign resources, it's going to be very difficult to get the results that you'd like to get.
Yeah, I have to agree 100%. Now, I admit I may have not have used project plans as well as I should have in the past. And as a result, we run up to certain spots where we couldn't drive performance in one area any further, not realizing or realizing after the fact that, hey, we had to have all this other stuff in place to make this work. So you definitely need that. But like you said, you can get started in some things. You just can only drive to a certain level of performance.
Yeah. And you'll, like you said, butt up against some of those, stop. I can only do so much within this function. And now I need these other people to get on board. And this project plan didn't even, we didn't even have one. We didn't even realize that. So now I've gotten as far as I can get. And now I'm trying to, push this rope uphill.
Yeah, the biggest one I see within that is the planning and scheduling piece. It'll go so far, but then they'll realize that unless they fix the storeroom and spare parts process, they're never truly going to get all the benefits they want out of it.
Yep. Or your work management process or scheduling process, how we, schedule the equipment and the liaisoning between maintenance and planning. It's going to be difficult to get a lot of value. Or, hey, we didn't really get HR on board, so we got a planner, but the job description is so weak that the planner's at the mercy of their, individual supervisors, and they're doing everything but planning.
Yeah, absolutely. So if we have this plan that outlines all the major activities, resources, and so on and so forth, why do we need a project manager?
Somebody has got to keep their eye on the ball. You've got to have somebody that owns that plan, right, and sort of facilitates all the activities within it. Now, you've got teams and the leadership team and these individual maybe focus teams or individual managers handling pieces of this, but somebody needs to be the cohesive glue between all of it.
All right. So this project manager is that cohesive glue. They're pulling together, the people actually making the tactical changes. They're making sure that the leadership team or the steering committee is making the right strategic decisions. They're staying ahead of the tactical teams, all those sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. They've got the strategic, viewpoint of everything that's going on. So think of them like, if you want to use a military type, they're like a general, right? Or an admiral that's kind of keeping their eye on the entire strategy as a whole.
All right. Excellent. So what should that project manager be doing to support that leadership team then, or that steering committee? What are they doing?
They should be creating transparency where the project is in relation to the plan, right? So where are we at? What did the plan say? They need to be communicating the challenges in an open and honest way. So not trying to make, candy coat things or make things look better than they are. If we've got a problem, we need to address it and then get the help that's needed to overcome those things. So it could be, resources, removing barriers, dealing with difficult people, etc. So they are sort of the voice for the leadership team when the leadership team isn't there, right? So the project manager is going to be bouncing around and participating in these various activities, but as well as acting as a feedback loop. When they see things, they need to feed it back to the leadership team.
All right, excellent. Are they also holding that leadership team or steering committee accountable to their actions on that project plan as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Gently reminding the leadership team, right? Because inevitably somebody on the leadership team is probably that project manager's boss, but they're the ones that are holding everybody accountable to the timeline. And that includes the leadership team.
All right. Excellent. One of the things I've seen happen in the past is maybe we didn't have a strong enough project manager in this implementation, and the leadership team or steering committee gets behind, and they get behind to the point where the tactical people are making decisions and making changes without even understanding the strategy because they were just so sick of waiting for certain things to get done from the leadership team. That becomes a major issue because then those people doing the tactical things may have to go back and redo that stuff. And then we get a lot of feedback and a lot of pushback, and change becomes harder to implement.
I have seen that time and time again. we've got to get the leadership team ahead of the rest of the organization, right? They're kind of supposed to be leading the charge. Now, it doesn't mean that they're going to micromanage every decision that the teams are making, but they have to have a very clear picture of the vision and the constraints and be able to communicate that to the focus teams. What you don't want is a mom dad situation for anybody that's, you know, that has kids, right? Which is, I didn't like the answer that I got from mom, so I went to dad to see if I could get a different answer. And if you have members on the leadership team that are not in agreement about the direction, that are not in lockstep, that don't have a clear picture or can't even communicate it consistently what the vision is, then you're going to get a lot of confusion.
Yes, absolutely. And we get those false starts occurring on a regular basis, which just makes life that much more difficult. Now, what should the project manager be doing to support the teams that are actually implementing these changes, whether they're developing the FMEA process, reviewing criticality, work management, whatever? How does the project manager support them?
So they need to get them what they need when they need it. So whether that's freeing up time, funds, you know, various other resources, pulling other functions into their meetings get buy-in or perspective, right? That the project manager should be making sure that those teams have what they need to be successful. They need to constantly re-communicate the vision. So the teams can easily have scope creep, right? They start to realize there's all this stuff that's broken and they start reaching out into other areas to try to fix all these things. But depending on how your teams are structured, you really need some boundaries between those teams so that we aren't duplicating effort or creating, you know, multiple solutions for the same problem, that kind of stuff. So that project manager is helping make sure that everyone sort of stays in their lane. They need to encourage the teams to identify the barriers and the risks so that they can be communicated to the leadership team and then they can be addressed at the leadership team level. And just make sure that they're following the plan. Like you said, holding the teams accountable, including the leadership team, you know, and adjusting the plan when the plan doesn't make sense anymore. Because there's going to be times where you may run into some unforeseen issues or the constraints have changed or whatever, and you need to adjust the plan.
Yeah, I think the one thing you mentioned there is help manage that scope creep is absolutely vital. Working with a client recently, they have a team focused on the precision maintenance, predictive maintenance stuff. So they're really in that area. Well, someone was looking at how do we measure chlorides or something in their cooling water? Oh, that's condition monitoring. Send that over to the PDM team. No. That is not what they're doing. That is not within the scope. They are not a dumping ground for everything, every new sensor that someone wants to put in the facility. So I think that sort of thing is absolutely vital to prevent those teams from becoming a dumping ground for new ideas, for venturing too far. There's a lot that the project manager, I think, helps in manage that scope creep.
Yep, absolutely. That's a great example.
Now, the project manager, what are their daily activities then? I know they're supporting the leadership team. They're supporting, you know, the individual focus teams, that sort of thing. But what are they actually doing? And is this a full-time thing? Is it part-time? What is it?
Yeah, it's full-time. I mean, if you're doing anything above just small incremental changes, you're looking at a full-time position, at least until, you know, the project is over, right? So dedicated to that project full-time until it's complete. They're monitoring the various activities. They're updating the project plan and the project status. They're, you know, potentially adding more tasks, right? So as these focus teams start to dig into things and they go, hey, our project plan is sort of missing some of these other more detailed activities, that stuff needs to get into the project plan. So the project manager would be reviewing that with those teams. They need to be constantly communicating with the focus teams, whether that's information, you know, from the leadership team or back up. I mean, they're sort of the communication glue that's holding this whole thing together. They're attending the leadership team meetings. They're executing on the overall communication plan. So, I mean, once again, potentially through delegation, right? They don't need to be the ones that are writing all the internal press releases and creating all the flyers and that kind of stuff, but managing that sort of sub plan of the overall project plan, collecting feedback from the communication strategy, right? How well is it being received? Are people getting on board? Do they understand what's going on? Right. And then adjusting that. So that's a huge part just by itself, is managing that communication plan. And then identifying risks, you know, keep your ears to the ground, use the rumor mill, listen for things, be looking out at changes in the environment. What's coming that could screw us over as far as the project, and be tracking the project metrics and KPIs. And then there's just a lot of general project documentation and document management. So meeting minutes and action items and all that stuff. Somebody has to sort of organize all that.
All right. And they're also coordinating the training, making sure that, you know, the rooms are available, trainers are going to show up, supplies are there, all that other stuff as well. It is definitely not a easy job for sure.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out Iridicio's IBL Blended Learning for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals. This SMRP-accredited project-based curriculum will take you through all aspects of a maintenance and reliability program and provides you with all the tools you need to generate a 30 times return on investment for your organization and a set of credentials from the University of Tennessee for you. You can find out more at ibltraining.com.
Now, when we're looking at selecting a project manager for a maintenance and reliability implementation, what qualities are we looking for? Do we need someone heavily experienced in maintenance and reliability? Do we just need an experienced project manager? What are we looking for here?
That's a good question. I've seen folks that really understand M&R, and that, you know, certainly can be an advantage. But honestly, anybody who is respected within the organization, they're organized, and I'm going to put super emphasis on organized. Like, they have to be an organized individual. They have to, you know, be able to keep track of all these moving pieces and parts, and document them and communicate them and keep them in a transparent manner. So that, you know, organized. And I'm thinking just absolutely outstanding communicator too, right? Being able to pick up on verbal, nonverbal cues, being able to really get people on board with the vision. You know, they've just got to be just an amazing communicator. I'm also thinking, maybe I'm going to coin this term here, but semi-rigid flexible. And so somebody who's good at planning, but knows when it's time to adjust course. So, you know, we've got a plan, we're sticking to it, but there's times where you need to be able to deviate, and knowing when those times are, that's somebody who I would be looking for. And then somebody with the technical ability to manage a project, but incredibly strong on the people side of things.
All right. So they got to, you know, be respected in the organization, be extremely organized, semi-rigid, flexible, if you will, a great communicator, have those people skills. That's what we need out of a project manager.
That's what comes to mind. I mean, I've done one of these where the plant controller on the finance side was actually the project manager for the M&R effort. You wouldn't have thought that would be the individual, but boy, he was outstanding because he possessed these qualities and the technical decision-making of, well, how should we, you know, what criticality tools should we use? How should we build it? You know, what should our hierarchy look like? I mean, that's honestly left up to the teams, right? So this individual was just really good at herding the cats.
So excellent. That's what we need. We need that herding of the cats, because there is a point where organizations during this implementation, they're trying to develop the new way of doing things or starting to implement a new way of doing things, but we're not quite there. So they're also dealing with the old way of doing things, and they're in that awkward area where it's very easy for those cats to wander.
Yep. It's awful. that transition zone is very painful.
Yes. And that's where I think the communication, good communicator comes in. They can listen to the rumors, understand concerns, make sure that the steering committee is made aware of those and help address those. And it's those little things, I think, go a long way to driving success.
Yeah. And they should be, you know, I think adding to that, managing expectations, right? Managing expectations of the leadership team and managing expectations of the focus team and the organization. Hey guys, we know that we're supposed to be using this new tool and we're not doing it quite right yet. And you guys are pointing out that we're making mistakes with it. We understand we're making mistakes. We're all learning, you know, we'll be getting better at this. So somebody who can communicate that kind of message while you go through the pain of change to manage, you know, the expectations that this isn't just some sort of switch that you flip and then all of a sudden magically everybody's doing everything according to the new process.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we know what qualities we're looking for in a project manager, but what makes the project manager actually successful? Is it communicating every day? Is it balancing all those things we've talked about? What makes them successful?
Yeah, if they've been truly empowered by the leadership team, I think that makes a huge difference because then they can just execute on the vision and they're not worried about stepping on any political toes or anything like that. You know, if the project manager has the right people on the focus teams, I think that makes a huge difference as well. So team selection will inevitably help that project manager be successful. And they've got to really understand the vision. So, I mean, know that this isn't a technical implementation as much as it is a soft side or people implementation. So, you know, Michael Hammer, and when we talk about resources, he's a good one. He's got some really good books out there. But, you know, he would always say the soft stuff is the hard stuff. So a successful project manager is going to be able to navigate all those non-technical challenges.
Yeah, absolutely. I often find organizations, it's easy for them to figure out predictive maintenance, FMEAs, all that technical stuff, because that's what we live and do every day. But caring about feelings, communicating, managing the change, that's all stuff that the vast majority of maintenance reliability people aren't all that good at. So we need the project manager that helps and drives those sorts of things to make this successful.
Yeah, I can design something on paper all day, you know, from an FMEA process and say, hey, this is how we should do it. And that's great. But until people start following it, that you're not going to get any benefit.
Absolutely. Now, what are the first steps organizations should take when they're looking to implement maintenance and reliability? Is it finding that project manager first? Is it developing the plan first or roughing out the plan? What do they got to do first?
I put together a hit list because you and I kind of talked about some of these questions ahead of time. And the hit list that I came up with is, identify the key stakeholders and that project manager, sort of the phase one, right? Who's going to be impacted by these changes? Obviously, the population of the plant, but I'm more specifically talking about the leadership team members that need to be involved, right? That are going to have to buy in and support this. Get educated on maintenance and reliability best practices. So this is for the project manager, this is for the focus teams, and this is for the leadership team members. So before we even really start, we need to know what it's going to look like in the end, and we don't know what it should look like unless we understand what the best practices are. Not that we're going to adopt all of them or you know, make some sort of giant leap, but let's understand what's out there so that we know where our gaps are. From there, craft the vision. Here's where we want to be, and then build the roadmap, and that's the project plan. So, hey, we know where we're at. We know where we want to be. Now let's put together some of these milestones, high level, you know, technical steps to get us there. And then I've got to execute on that plan. So in order to execute on the plan, I need to identify what resources to execute on the plan, what kind of constraints I'm going to run into. That you can start building your communication strategy at that point, and then identify the risks, which kind of go hand in hand with your communication strategy and risk management plan.
All right. Excellent. So, you know, identify those gaps, craft that vision, build the roadmap, identify risks, build comp plan. Those are the major things we need to be doing. Now,
yeah. And notice we really haven't kicked off anything at this point, right? So we don't have teams mapping processes, or we don't have, you know, tools that we're going out and buying, or new software. We're still making sure that everybody that are the key stakeholders know where we're going.
Yep, absolutely. And if we do that stuff well up front, implementation should be much easier and much quicker.
It'll be a lot easier. Yep.
Now, what is the one thing that you hope proper management of this implementation will bring to organizations? And I think we may have just answered that, but I want to make sure.
We did. It's speed of adoption, you know, less organizational pain while getting there. I mean, you're going to feel it anyway, but the more leadership is aligned on board and can drive that change and act quickly on the decisions that the focus teams are making, you're going to feel a lot less pain. And then you're going to get greater returns, right? So it's, you know, you and I have talked about planning and scheduling probably a million times, but it's a good example. You do a lot of preparation up front so that when it's time to execute the job, it goes a lot smoother. And this is no different.
Yeah, absolutely. That prior prep work goes a huge distance in eliminating that grief, headache, false starts, all those things. Now, if you had a magic wand, though, what would be that one thing you would change in how most organizations manage the implementation of maintenance and reliability?
I was going to say, quit kicking off the project before the leadership team has their head around what this thing's going to look like, and that they're truly supporting and ready to support the change effort. So I've seen a lot of these kick off, you know, all these managers and all nod their head and go, yep, we want to do this. This sounds great. It's going to make all of our lives easier. But don't change anything about the way I'm doing business in my, you know, in my silo. As soon as they're required to make some sort of change, you know, they may get on board, but it's going to take them a while to get their head around what that might look like and how they're going to need to change business within their function to support the initiative. Well, while they're getting their head around that, people pick up on that, you know, that delay in decision making, or even just the facial expression they make when you bring up that subject.
Yeah.
Right? And they all of a sudden they go, well, so-and-so is not going to support it. You know, so clearly this is going to be another failed initiative. I'm going to, rather than change and then change back, I'm just going to fence it and see what happens. So that's what you end up with. So that's my huge, I guess, pet peeve. And I know, you know, if you've got trainers in there or consultants in there, you know, or whatever you got going on, you're spending money and you're not really getting anything for that money at that point. So there's this sense of urgency to you know, get started, right? But you're just going to end up delaying the results by getting started without getting alignment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that leadership team has to be well on its way, understanding the scope, all that stuff before we kick off the actual teams and all the initiatives. I think the one thing I would build on there is I see a lot of organizations, even if they get the leadership team in place, they really struggle on the communications plan. How do we communicate what's changing, who's impacted, what impacts are there? How do we manage all that communication? I find a lot of organizations struggle with that piece in particular.
It's a monster. You can have a plan and execute on it. And even then you're still not going to 100% have everybody, you know, understanding the various communications. But, you know, I'm with you 100%. I see a lot of managers or groups when they do this thing, they severely underestimate the level of effort that it's going to take to properly communicate. And sometimes they go, okay, yeah, we communicated and we kicked this thing off, and then we'll communicate again when we've got something to say. Well, even that's not enough. I mean, you literally have to tell everybody that you have nothing to say. And it seems stupid. And you're like, why would I need to do that? But you're helping manage the expectations of the team and the organization by saying, hey, the teams are still developing stuff. There's nothing to share yet, but we're excited. We'll be excited to announce when their first processes are done. I mean, that is something you kind of have to do to, otherwise it really seems like okay, we kicked this project off and then it went dark.
Or they're hiding something.
Or they're hiding something, right? That's a good point. Yeah, people are going to infer meaning into a lack of information. Yep,
absolutely. Now, what is the one thing you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today? We talked about a lot on the implementation and what the project manager should be doing. But what is the one thing you want our listeners to take away?
Yeah, this when you're doing one of these, if you get involved or you get plugged in or you're going to lead one, you know, this is not a new product line installation or a new piece of equipment. This ultimately is about changing behaviors. So do not shortcut that upfront work of building the plan and getting the alignment and getting that communication plan built and executing on it.
All right. Excellent. Great advice from someone who's lived through many of these.
I've seen the good and the bad.
And the ugly.
And the very ugly.
All right, Brandon. Well, I know you're busy, but before you go, where can people find out more about you, all the activities you're involved in, resources you want to share?
Yep. If you're listening to this podcast, I have a history of them now that you can go back and find on various topics. And there will inevitably, I think, be more. So, this is a good place to catch at least my viewpoint. Also on our website for the company I work for, Eruditio, that's eruditio.com. I have some famous videos on there.
The angel video for one, I will put a link to.
The angel video. Yes. I'm like you said, I'm also on the conference committee for 2019 and 2020 and 2021. So I'll be around. So heavily involved. I wouldn't be doing my due diligence if I didn't tell everybody to make sure that you come to the annual conference this year. And that's on smrp.org. If you want to find out more information about the Society for Maintenance and Reliability Professionals and the certification that they offer. I'm on LinkedIn, so you can just search Brandon Wheel, Eruditio, I'll pop up. And then I'm also on Twitter. I don't tweet as much as probably need to, but my handle is @reliabilitygoat.
All right. Excellent. What about resources? You mentioned a gentleman, Michael something.
Michael Hammer. Yep. Michael Hammer, Amazon. He's got, you know, two or three really good books about business process, reorganization, implementation. So very good resource there. Just general project management. I'd look at PMI.org, right? Project Management Institute. And then they obviously have a certification in the PMP, but a lot of that's more technical stuff, but still, you know, there's a lot of risk management planning and making sure you have a good, overall plan and resourcing and dependencies between tasks. So that's all good information from a, you know, technical project management standpoint, which is needed. Another resource, Peter Senge, The Fifth Discipline, really encourages systems thinking. That's a great book. Paradigms by Joel Barker is another good book about, you know, how to influence folks, right? How personal paradigms are created and how to, you know, inevitably change them. And then Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. I just kind of have to throw that one in there because there's a lot of elements of that apply to these large scale changes.
All right. Those are some great resources. I know PMI, if you remember, you get full access to the body of knowledge and also all kinds of other guides. And they do one on risks and also stakeholders. Both of those are fantastic resources when you're trying to build up your communications plan. First thing you got to do is understand your stakeholders and what are their needs. So Some great resources there. Well, Brandon, I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk to us about a project manager's guide to reliability implementations. Definitely took away some more great things and some more insights, and I'm sure our listeners did as well. So thank you very much.
Great. Thanks, James. Thanks for having me.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.eruditio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.